All right, so we are holding on Chof Aleph on the Aleph by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Chayovei Erchin Mashkim Nosam, a person who is Chayov an Erech to the Bais Mikdash, or for that matter, say, in the two of Domin, Mimashkin and Nosam, we take a Mashkin from him to force him to pay. There's actually different kinds of Mashkin, and there are different Rishonim talk about. What are we talking about? Is this kind of Mashkin that they take as like a pledge? Like if he wants to redeem it, then he gets like something that you give to a pawn shop or something, where if he wants it back, he's going to have to pay. Or do we mean a mashkin where we're actually going to take it and sell it to sell it to somebody else to satisfy the debt, and then the debt will be paid to him. Either way, it seems that it's talking about both of them. On the other hand, if a person is obligated to bring a chatos or an asham, then we do not take a mashkin from them. Because in the case of a chatos or an asham, first of all, it's necessary for kapara, so a person is not going to delay it for too long because he wants the kapara. And in some cases, as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, we're going to talk about on this Amud, we're going to say that usually, many times, a chatos or an asham also makes a person a mechusar kapara. Without it, without bringing it, he can't eat kodshim or enter the Bais Mikdash or whatever, and therefore we assume he's not going to stall that long. So therefore, we don't have to force him by taking a mashkin, because we expect he's going to do it soon anyway. On the other hand, if somebody is obligated to bring an oila or a shlomim, then and he's taking his time bringing it, then we do take a mashkin from them, because after all, those are not necessary for kapara, and therefore the person is likely to stall and not bring it in time. There's a choice within Rosh Hashanah that discusses the details that we're talking about before three regalim have passed, you know, before he's over before he's been over on Baal Ta'achar, or are we talking after that? One answer that Tosfos says over there, maybe we're talking about where Beis Din sees that the person is squandering his money, and therefore it may even be it's before Baal Ta'achar. He still has time left in the year, but they can see he's squandering his money, and so they can see by the time it comes, the end of the year, he's not going to have enough to bring this Torban unless they force the issue by taking the mashkin. So that would be one answer. The Ramban over there, talks about over there, maybe we're talking about only after we reach the point of Baal Ta'achar, maybe only then do we take a mashkin from him. Okay. So now, even though the fact is that he doesn't get kapara with the Torban's not acceptable, in other words, unless he is willing to bring the Torban, Shenemar, the pasuk says Lurit Soinoi, the pasuk says that a korban has to be brought with the person's free will. Nevertheless, it's okay because of the famous expression, Kofin Osei Hashiyomer Rotzani. They can force him until he verbally says, I agree, I want. B'cheinata Omer B'gitei Noshim, and so the same din is true as far as when a man is obligated al pi halacha to give his wife a get. Same thing, Kofin Osei Hashiyomer Rotzani, based in, can force him until he says Rotzani. Which you have the question, obviously, how can that be if the Torah says he has to require it, he has to want it? So we have the very, very famous expression in the Rambam, in Hilchos Geirushin, that ever quoted it innumerable times in Sichos, that what it is deep down, every Yid's real rotzen is to do what Hashem wants, but he has a Yetzer Hara that stands in the way. So therefore, the Kofinoso, the forcing the person, gets rid of that Yetzer Hara and allows his natural self, which wants to listen to Hashem, to reassert itself. So therefore, when he says Roitzani, it's expressing his true, deeper Rotzain, that he really wanted to do it all along and was just being prevented from it by his Yetzer Hara.
Added to it, to that, the Torah doesn't specify that his Rotzain shouldn't be burned.
No, because the fact is, if it has to be Lotzoner, you would argue that if he says Roitzani and it's insincere, then it would be no good. And by the way, as far as Gittin, for example, you have a halacha that it depends. Who is it that's forcing him? And why is it that Isaiah is that for? If it's a Beis Din that's forcing him, and it's a situation where he's required of the halacha to give his wife a get, then yes, Kofinos Hashem Rotzani. On the other hand, if it's a Goyish court, and the grounds that they're doing it is not something that halacha would require him to divorce her, and you can have, I mean, you can imagine, for example, in American law, let's say, or, you know, you can have cases where, you know, where the woman wants a divorce, and al pi halacha he's not required to give it. She wants out. So fine, not every time she wants out does that obligate him to give a divorce. If the court were to force him in such a case, and even if he says roitzani, it wouldn't work, because we could only say roitzani roitzani when, as I'm saying, when we're talking about a situation where the forcing is making that he's going to actually follow halacha, and therefore that expresses his deeper desire to follow halacha.
So one second, you saying that if the Goyish court forces him to give a get, it's not a get.
Then it's not a get, exactly.
If
a Beis Din forces him and the grounds are valid off the halacha, then yes, right. But in other words, if, for example, hypothetically, nowadays in Israel, you have this kind of thing sometimes, the Bukid Dinim have a certain amount of government power. Well, not as much in America, but in America, they have to do different workarounds with it. But in Israel in particular, you have sometimes where a husband is required off the halacha to give a get. And what the Beis Din will do, they themselves don't necessarily have so much enforcement power, but they can tell the secular Israeli court system or the Israeli police or whatever that this guy should be jailed or whatever it is until he's willing to give the get. That would be an example of kofinosad shemadotani. As opposed to, for example, let's say for example you're in one of the states that have no fault divorce laws, where the wife just wants a divorce and the court is trying to pressure the husband into giving a get. Not just a civil divorce, but also a get. That would be an invalid get.
Even if it's given by Beis Din?
If the Goyish court is pressuring him on grounds that are not valid off the halacha to give a get, then yeah, it doesn't work.
Now, 1 second, that's for sure. But if the Goyish court pressures the Beis Din to give the get,
Didn't give a chos adina only applies to monitoring matters. It doesn't apply to getting kiddushin and whatnot. But no, in any case, it's not a question. The Beis Din only supervises the giving of the get. The actual giving of the get has to be based on the husband's rotzon. He has to say roitani. So therefore, so that's the issue over here. Is the Goyish court forcing him based on American law? No good then. If they're forcing him based on Jewish law, in other words, if the Beis Din paskins that he's required to give a get, the halacha, and then because they don't have enforcement power, they turn to the American courts and make them enforce it, that would be valid. And these dinim are very, very tricky and very, very complicated, but that's the basic idea behind it. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Omer Papa, Omim Shechayove Chatoris Mimashkin and Oysan, Chayove Olus Ein Mimashkin and Oysan. You were saying in the Mishnah that when a person is Chayav, a Chakas or an Osham, we never take a Mashkin from them on the theory that sooner or later they're going to bring the Korban themselves because they need the Kapara or whatever. And on the other hand, when they're Chayav and Oyl or a Shlomim, we do take a Mashkin. Rapapa says that's not always a hard and fast rule. Sometimes the person is chayav achatos, and we will take a mashkin from him. And sometimes the person is chayav an ola, and we won't have to take a mashkin from him. What are the examples? Chayav achatos mashkin noisan. The example would be the chatos nozer. Suppose, for example, when it comes to the chatos of a nozer. Now, we know that a nozer, when he's finished his nezivus, brings three korbanos, one of which is a chatos. He brings a chatos, an ola, and a shlomim. Now, like this, Kivin de Omamar, now we learn in Masechta Nozer, Im Dilach al Echad Mishloshtan Yotza, that, so he brings his korbanos and he shaves his hair, and then his nezirus is over, and then he's able to drink wine, and time of the mess, and whatever. So if he shaved his head in connection with any one of the three korbanos, then he's Yotza. He's going to have to later bring the other korbanos, but already at that point we can say his nezirus is over. The Nizrach Olav Echad Min Adamim, and once the blood of any one of the three korbanos is sprinkled on his behalf, then he becomes mutter to drink wine and become tummy mess. Therefore, he may get careless and not bring the chakas. He may, for example, only bring the shlomim, let's say, and shave his hair in that connection, and the blood will be sprinkled, and then his nezirus is over, and he's going to say, okay, I know I have to bring an ola, and I know I have to bring a chakas. I'll get around to it one of these days. The Torah says you have to bring a chakas, so you have to bring a chakas. The Gemara mentions in a few places Shatir asked him in Ayayin, because one reason is because he caused himself discomfort by abstaining from wine, and therefore that's considered a certain degree of an aveira. Whatever it is, the fact of the matter is he has to bring a chatos. So therefore the point is, suppose he brought his other korbanos and not yet the chatos, he may get careless. Because the chatos is not bringing the chatos and preventing his nezirus from being over. That is the case, therefore, says Rapapa, where we're going to have to force the issue, we're going to have to take a mashkin from him in order to force him to bring the chatos so he doesn't keep stalling with it. On the other hand, chayove oilus ain't...
Because
that's not the rule. The rule is you can offer the korbanos in any order. And on the other hand, chayove oilus ain't a mashkin. And on the other hand, says Rapapa, what would be an example with somebody who's obligated to bring an oila where you don't have to take a mashkin from them? The example would be ba'oilus yeled. The oila that a woman has to bring after she gives birth. where she has to bring an ola and a chatas. So the idea is she's not allowed to eat kodshim until she brings the ola. So therefore, same idea. She's not going to stall too long with bringing the ola because she wants to be able to eat kodshim again. The question is, my nihu. So what do you mean? That the reason why she's barred from eating korbanos is essentially she's not really barred from korbanos because of the ola. It's really because of the chatas. She has to bring an ola and a chatas. So the question is, in what sense does the ola have to come ahead of a chatas? Mind you, what is it? To akumei kra? You're going to say just because the pasuk mentions the ola first, therefore that implies that the ola is a necessary prerequisite for the chatas? No, v'ha amar Rava. Rava says in the Gemara, in the Milundas and Zvachim, l'mikra hikima akasu. All it is the Torah mentions the ola and then the chatas first, not to imply that the order is actually first she brings the ola, then she brings the chatas. The chatas is actually brought first. Rather, the ola is just mentioned first in the pasuk, but not that it's actually brought first. Because in general, we learned in Zvachim, in Perek Kolatadir, we have an order of precedence for korbanos. And in general, we have a chatas, when you have a chatas and an ola together, in general, the chatas comes first. There's an exception by Siri Abadazara with an impartial shlach, whatever. The point is in general the chatas comes first. The Rava is saying the only sense in which the ola is first is just that it's listed first in the pasuk, but not that you actually have to bring it first. Tosfos over there and the Menagershim over here say that also Lamikra means that when you're designating the korbanos, you're supposed to designate the ola first. But the chatas is actually brought first. So in what sense
and you bring
the chatas first, right. But the point is the bottom line is, the ola is not a prerequisite to bring the chatas. If you brought the chatas, she could conceivably store with the ola. So why are you telling me that you don't have to take a mashkin from her? Ela ba'ola smitzova. Rather, no, we have to say, we're not talking about the case would be the ola of a yuledis, but rather the ola of a mitzova. A mitzova, when he's finished with his tzaraach, also brings a couple of korbanos. He brings three korbanos. If he's rich, he brings three animals. If he's poor, he brings two animals, and he brings one animal and two birds. So he's bringing an ola, a chatas, and an asham. So when it comes to the ola of a mitzvah, the Tanya, as we learn in the Braise, Rabbi Shmuel b'nei Shor of Yehuda ben Breiko, it's really supposed to be Rabbi Yechon ben Breiko, I know. Kishem shechatot v'ashama ikvatui, but he says that just as the chatas and the asham of the Masorah are essential, meaning that if he doesn't bring them, then he can't eat kodshim and he can't enter the Masorah. So, says Rabbi Shmuel, but no, Rabbi Yechon ben Breiko, the same thing is true as far as the Masorah is over. So therefore, the proper thing, according to that opinion, you don't have to force the Beis Din, doesn't have to force him by taking a mashkin to bring his ola. He himself is going to bring his ola as soon as possible, along with the other korbanos, because he wants to be able to eat kodshim again.
Otherwise he can't.
So therefore, we don't have to be mashkin. Now, the halacha is not actually like that. The halacha is not like Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher, Rabbi Yechon ben Breiko. He can eat kodshim even without having brought his ola. Therefore, you would have to be mashkin him, because otherwise he may stall and not bring the ola. Then we said, we said in the Mishnah that the person does not have kapara, meaning the korban is not accepted on his behalf, unless he's actually willing, because it says lo tzono, but we said, we can force him, based in can force him until he says rotani. So let's talk about that. Whatever methods are necessary. It might be by taking a mashkin, it might be by malchus, it might be by whatever kind of sanctions are necessary to get him to say rotani. So turn it on, we learn in a brisa. The pasuk says Yakriv Oso, the person says he has to bring the korban, implying he has to bring it no matter what. Therefore, Malama Jakofino. So from there we learn that Beis Din can force him to bring the korban when he's obligated to bring it.
Yakriv?
Yakriv, not Meloshin korban, but in other words, Yakriv, he shall bring it. In other words, he shall bring it regardless of the situation.
So it means he could bring it?
No, it means he has to bring it. Otherwise he didn't have to say it at all. The pasuk actually goes im ola korbanim in abaka zachar tamim yakrivenu al pesach olamay yakriv oisa. So it already says yakrivenu earlier in the pasuk. It doesn't have to repeat yakriv oisa again. So malamet chakayim. So yochel bal korchay. You would think that means even if it's completely against his will, even if the whole time he's protesting, I don't want. No, tamabaim alur tzoynay. The next word in the pasuk is alur tzoynay. It has to be with his free will. Ha ketzad. So how do you reconcile the yakriv oisa and the tzoynay? Kofinos yachem odosami. So that's what it is. You have the combination. On the one hand, you can force him, but on the other hand, eventually he has to say Roitani for it to be valid. Amar Shmuel. So Shmuel says in this connection, oila tzricha das. When an oila is being brought on behalf of a person, it requires his das. He has to know that it's being brought. The question is, the shenemer lo tzonei, because the pasuk says it has to be with his will. So the question is, my kamash malam. What is Shmuel's chiddush? Tanena. We just said that. No, no, no. In general, we said in the Mishnah that all korbanos in the scapula are yotze. You have the difference. Some of them you need to take a mashkin from him. Some of them you don't. So some of them he's more likely to stall. Some of them not. But Shmuel is saying that any time a person's ola is being brought, it has to be with his das. Shenemer lo tzonei. Question is, my kamash malam. What's Shmuel's chiddush? Is it tanena? That's exactly what we said in the Mishnah. Alpha pishem is capital actually is throughout to shenema lo tanena. The answer is loit tzricha. Yes, but Shmuel's chiddush is the Mishnah and the Braisa are talking about where the person is bringing his own carbon. Then yes, it has to be loit tzricha. Shmuel's chiddush is even when it's not his own carbon. The parish leichave. Suppose that somebody else set aside a carbon on his behalf. So Reuven is chayav an ola, whether it's that he made a neder that he's going to bring an ola, whether, for example, Reuven, or let's say, or Rochel is a yeledes and is obligated to bring an ola, whether Reuven is an atzeret, or whatever the scenario is that Reuven is obligated to bring an ola for one reason or another. And Shimon designates a korban on, takes one of his own animals and designates it on behalf of, to take care of Reuven's obligation, that should be mechaper for Reuven. So the point is, Shmuel is telling us that Shimon can't just bring the korban without informing Reuven. He has to inform Reuven, I'm bringing one of my animals on your behalf that you should have your kapara. That's right. One second. Mao detain us. You would think like this. Kiba in a gap.
Reuven made him a Mashiach.
No, he didn't even make him a Mashiach. Shimon just voluntarily on his own decides to, yeah. So the point is, Mao detain us. You would think like this. Kiba in a das. When do you need das for the korban to be brought? Midi day, only if it's his own animal being brought. Like, for example, where Beis Din has to take a mashkin from him and he has to be able to say roitani. Avon with the chavre law, you would think if the animal is coming from somebody else's possessions, it shouldn't even be required. Kamash malon. That is what Shmuel was telling us. No, even in that case, you need his das. And why do you need that? Zimnin deloy nichale, because sometimes it may be the case that this person, that Reuven, does not want delikafer b'midi deloidi day. He may not want to have a kapara with something that doesn't belong to him. So when Shimon says to Reuven, so if Shimon were to just be mocked with the korban on behalf of Reuven without informing Reuven, we don't know whether Reuven would be happy with that. Maybe after all, Reuven, when he finds out about it, would say, I never wanted that. If I'm gonna make a neder to bring a korban, or if I'm obligated to bring a korban for whatever reason, I'm gonna step up to the plate and bring my own. So therefore, so Shimon has to inform Reuven, and Reuven has to agree. You have at the end of Shmuel, for example, one tells over there how David goes to Gur and Aravna Hayavusi to build a mizbeach over there to end the plague, which was the future site of the mizbeach and the Beis Mikdash. So Aravna offers him, King David, you can have the land for free, you can have the animals for free, etc. And David tells him, no, I'm not going to bring Veloy El Hashem L'Kai Oilus Chinam. I'm not bringing Korbanos for free. You pay for something that you bring into the Korban. You don't just take whatever you can for free. So the same thing over here. Reuven may have that way of thinking. He doesn't just want a free thing from Shimon that's going to be a kapara. He may want his own. So therefore, Shimon has to check with him. Okay. Big Moses is Macy's there. I have a contradiction against Shmuel. A Braisa says, if a person says, if Shimon says that I obligate myself to bring a chasas or an asham that Reuven owes, is an obligation on me. What das yotza? If he's informed Reuven, then he's yotza. Shaloi l'das lo yotza. But if you didn't inform Reuven, then it's not yotza. So far, so good. That part agrees with what Shmuel says. But if Shimon says, I am taking on the obligation to bring an oila or a shlomim that Reuven is chayavin, then he's yotze, the korban is valid, whether it's with Reuven's das or not. Amalach Shmuel, so the answer is, Shmuel will answer you, kitanyahi b'shat kapor. Yes, but that b'naisa, saying that you don't need das when it comes to the ola or the shlomim, is talking about when you're actually doing the kapara, when you're being makri the korban. In other words, once you informed him at the time when you designated the animal that Reuven, I know you're obligated to bring an ola, I'm going to take an animal of my own and designate it as an ola and bring it on your behalf, and Reuven says fine, Then Shimon doesn't have to check with Reuven again when right before the korban is being shechted and the blood sprinkled. The fact that Reuven agreed at the beginning is good enough even now.
Well, we're
going to have the opinion of Ullah. We're going to say that disagrees with Shmuel. Now, the interesting question is what happens if Shimon tells Reuven at the time, fine, and then Reuven says, fine, go ahead and be makriv on my behalf. Then let's say, when it comes to being makriv the korban, what if Reuven actually protests and says, you know what, Shimon, I changed my mind. I don't want you to bring the korban on my behalf. Would it work or not? So you actually have a discussion in the Rambam and the Raivet and the Noisa Kalim. No, but you could argue, though, that it's one thing you could say, Al-Das Rishonah. You could say when Shimon eventually brings the korban, once he previously informed Reuven that he's going to bring it and Reuven agrees, then it's good, and then anything that Reuven says afterwards doesn't change that. Or maybe not. If he explicitly says at the time of the Haktovah, you know what, Shimon, never mind, I don't want you to bring it, maybe it wouldn't work.
What about if he says, the first time he says, do it, but it may change my mind?
I don't know. Maybe that would work. Maybe not. I don't know. Whatever it is, the point is that you have different opinions on the subject of what happens if he actually protests afterwards. Okay. Fine. So Shmuel would say that that's what it means, Shaloy Ladas is Yosef. It means that there was no Das at the time when he's bringing the korban, but there was Das when he first designated. So therefore, Tanya Ahiva, Shas Kapora, that Braisa is talking about when there was no Das at the time of Kapora, the Iraqi, the Shas Kaprosha, as long as he was agreeable at the time when Shimon designated the korban. I'm talking about when Shimon is first designating the korban, then there's no difference what type of korban it is. Either way, Shimon has to check with Reuven first. Okay. The Gemara says, Sliga de Ola. Now, all of this that we're saying, that Shmuel holds that Reuven has to agree at the time of Hafrosha, and that it doesn't matter what happens to Shas Kapara, that disagrees with Ullah. Ullah says exactly the other way around. The Omer Ullah, namely Ullah says, Loi Chilku ben Chatas Lo'ila, there's no distinction between Chatas and Ola. Ella, the distinction is, Shechatas Tzricha Das V'Shas Hafrosha, if Shimon is going to designate a Chatas on behalf of Reuven, then they have it. Hafrosha is the designation. So then Reuven has to know about it at the time of Hafrosha, whereas Ullah would say that if it comes to an Ullah, Shimon can designate an animal on behalf of Reuven without even checking with Reuven, and it would be valid. But Ullah would say, at the time of Kapara, Aidi va'Aidi with both of them, Chatas or Ola, Ladas Yotza, Shloi Ladas Lo Yotza. Then you need Reuven's Das. So according to Ullah, it's exactly the other way around. Shimon can designate the animal for Reuven's Ola, and everything's fine and good, but sometime before he's matched with it, he has to check with Reuven, which is exactly the opposite of what Shmuel said. And in the case of the Chatas, Ullah would say that you need Das, both of them. You need Das at the beginning and at the end. At the time of the Hafrosha and at the time of the Kapara, right? Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, maybe. I have a... So the Gemara says, maybe. I have a contradiction then in that case. The same Braitha we quoted before. No, this is actually a different Braitha. A different Braitha says, if Shimon says, I'm obligated to bring Reuven's Chatas or Osham or Ola or Shlomim, Ladas Yotza, if there's Das then he's Yotza, Shloi Ladas Lo Yotza. So you would say, So you have a question, therefore. So in other words, the Braita is saying that with all of them, you need Das. So therefore, so the question is both on Shmuel and on Ola. Shmuel is saying that there's a distinction between Shlomim and Chatas. At the time of both of them you need Das at the beginning when he's makrish it, but you only need Das at a kapara when it comes to a chatas. And Ullah says the other way around, you always need Das at a kapara, but you don't need Das at the beginning when it comes to shlomim. But the Braita doesn't seem to be making a distinction. The Braita seems to just be saying that all of them are in the same category. The answer is it's not a contradiction because Shmuel Muki Lava Shas HaFrosha. Shmuel would say the Braisa is talking about what has to happen at the time of HaFrosha. Ula Muki Lava Shas. According to Shmuel, you need Das at that time. So Muki means that he establishes. He says that the Braisa that we quoted before was talking about the time of HaFrosha. And this one is talking about Kapara. Ula Muki Lava Shas Kapara, whereas Ula would say the other way around. Previous Bryce there is talking about the time of Kapara, and this one is talking about the time of Afarasha. Or the other way around, actually. Ula would say that this second Bryce, which that we just quoted, is talking about Shas Kapara, where according to him, you always need Das at that time. Whereas Shmuel would say that when the Braisa said Hatosiv Hashama Olos Shlom of Shaploni Alai Ladas Yasa Shalola Das La Yasa, so Ula would say it's talking about the time of Kapara, because according to Ula you always need Das at the time of Kapara, and according to Shmuel you need it at the time of Afrosha. So that's what this Braisa would be talking about. So no contradiction. Now though, the question still remains that we have two Braises that seem to contradict each other. So Omar Papa Masnaisa Hadodi Lakashan. So now what it is like this. The Braises themselves are not a problem one against the other. They're not contradicting. No, Shmuel and Ola are Amiroyim. The Braises that we quoted, before that said that distinguishes in Chatose Vashamoi versus Olosa Shlomov. The first Braisa, which we quoted in connection with Shmuel, and the second Braisa, which we quoted in connection with Ula, so those two Braisas don't contradict each other, says Rapapa, because Hobashas Kapara, Hobashas Afrosha, because one is talking about, as we said, as one can be understood to be talking about the time of Kapara, and the other at the time of Afrosha, Bamburoi, Nami Lakasha, and continues Rapapa, the Braises don't contradict either one of the Amoroim either, because Shmuel Muki Kamaita B'Shas Kapara B'Shas B'Shas Afrosha, Shmuel will understand that the first Braisa, which made the distinction whether you need Das or not, is talking about the time of Kapara, and the second Braisa, which said that in all cases you need Das, is talking about B'Shas Afrosha, because according to Shmuel, you always need Das at the time of Afrosha. Ula Muki Ipcha, Ula would say the Braises are talking about the other way around. However, Papa says, Amoroi Vade Pligi. However, Rapapa says there's no question that the two Amoroim are arguing on the actual halacha. They're not Hamaitim is the first Braisa, but Braisa is the second. So Shmuel will understand the first one to be talking about Kapara and the second one Hafrosha. Ula will say the other way around. But you shouldn't think that maybe then Shmuel and Ula themselves are not arguing. Maybe they agree on the basic concept and they're just talking about with different covenants. No, they're definitely arguing. So the question is, isn't it obvious that Shmuel and Ula are arguing? Because if Shmuel is saying you need Das at the time of Afrosha always, but you don't need at the time of Kapara, and Ula is saying you don't need at the time of Afrosha, but you do. The answer is Mao de Tema, because you would think to say Mai b'Shas Afrosha b'Kama Shmuel. Maybe when Shmuel says you need Das when Shimon is setting aside the carbon, maybe at b'Shas Afrosha. Maybe he means not only at the time of Kapara, but also at the time of Afrosha. And in that case, which in that case you would say then the first Braisa would contradict Shmuel, but maybe you could understand Shmuel that way in order to make it that Shmuel and Ula are not arguing. I'm going to be slugged up by the first Braisa. Okay, so he'll be slugged up. No, Kamashmuel, that is what Rapapa wants to inform us. Don't do that. Understand that the way we said before, that Shmuel would understand the first Braisa versus the second Braisa is in fact correct. And therefore that Shmuel and Ula are actually arguing about the din. Do you need the Das of Reuven at the time of the Hafrosha or at the time of the Kapara? So according to Shmuel, and the Rambam passing for Shmuel, so therefore you always need the Das of the Miskaper, the one who's going to be atoned for by the Korban, at the time of the Hafrosha. You always need his Das in order for the Hafrosha to be valid. When it comes to the Kapara, that's not necessary. It's okay if he didn't know about it. It's okay if he didn't know about it at the time when you actually bring the Korban.
Contradicting
Ula. Contradicting Ula, yeah. So the halacha is like Shmuel. Okay. Then we said, v'chein v'gittin noshim kaifim kula. We said that when it comes to gittin also, beisdin can force the person, if he's required, can force the husband, if halacha requires him to divorce his wife. And by the way, it's not so simple. What are the cases when he's required to? You have, as we talked about before, for example, the Rambam holds, that the Rambam holds a very expansive definition of it, that if the wife says, I can't stand being married to this guy, the Rambam would hold that's grounds to force him to divorce her. Okay, she forfeits her ksuba and all the other benefits in that case. Maybe not forfeits her ksuba, I don't remember, but she forfeits a lot. Because her ksuba payment, I mean, in other words, because the husband can say, I didn't marry you in order for you to just walk out on me. But nevertheless, the Rambam at least holds that that is a valid reason to force him to divorce her. Because the Rambam says basically that she's not a maidservant, you can't force her to stay married to somebody that she hates. However, all the other Rishonim argue with the Rambam on that and say that's not valid and that's not valid reason to force him to divorce. So if he wants to, give him to hate, but the Beis Din can't force him. So that would be an example. According to the Rambam, Beis Din could force him, because according to the Rambam, of the Halacha, he'd be required to. According to everybody else, not. The Halacha is like everybody else. The Machaber, I think, doesn't even bring the Rambam's opinion in this regard.
Why?
Because everybody else disagrees with the Rambam on that.
He can force her to stay his wife. Against
she doesn't want to be married to him, then you have a concept in halacha called meredness, where a wife is rebellious against her husband, and then you have there are certain penalties that are exacted against her. The Gemara talks about it in Sukkot. Okay, so then in that case, obviously, I mean, what the Rabbanim should do at that point is get the two of them to marriage counseling or something, so that, to force him on the spot to divorce her, all the other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam and say that's not a valid reason.
Look, he's supposed to, he has obligations to his wife, towards his wife. How can he fulfill them if she wants to divorce him?
That's the point, in other words, so therefore she would be considered a meredith. This isn't really the place to talk about it at length. The Gemara talks about this in Sukkot. But yes, you have a concept of a murder, and you have a concept of a meredith, or you have a case where the husband doesn't want to fulfill his duties towards his wife, as far as shared tzuspa ona and whatever else he's claiming. You have a case where the wife doesn't want to fulfill her duties towards her husband. And then, yeah, there are, in both cases, there are consequences. Okay. So we can say, anyway, so we said, b'chein b'gitin nashim kofim kolo. So in a case where...
No real reason.
So again, right, I mean, yeah, right. Okay, so, yeah. So b'chein b'gitin nashim kofim kolo. So we said, when it comes to a get, if halacha requires him to divorce her, then Beis Din can force him until he says, roitzani. So Amar of Sheshet, so Rav Sheshet says in this connection, hai man demosim moida agita. Now, suppose you have a person make some moida about a get. A moidah is a concept, the Gemara talks about it primarily in Baba Basra, where you can have, the concept of moidah applies in general whenever it applies more broadly to dini mamonos. Let's say, for example, you have a person who's being pressured into selling a piece of property or something. So he doesn't really want to, but the local mafia or whatever is after him, and it's trying to force him to sell. What he can do is, he can declare ahead of time a moidah in front of Beis Din, in front of Edom, whatever it is exactly, saying basically, at some point in the near future, I'm going to be selling this field or house or whatever, but you should know I'm not doing it willingly. I'm being forced into it, and I am declaring in advance that I want it to be considered null and void, and therefore that helps, and therefore later on he has recourse in Beis Din against those people. Yeah. So, to be able to say that I was forced into it and it was
true.
I don't remember if you have to do a moidah in front of Beis Din or in front of Edom, whatever it is. You have details about it, but there is such a concept of a moidah. Now, by the same token, Rav Sheshet says a person would be able to make a moidah as far as a get, that he could conceivably go in front of Edom and say that the situation is like this. My wife, Rachel, wants me to divorce her, and Beis Din is forcing me into it because al pi halacha, they're saying I'm required to. I'm going to end up saying roitzani, but I want you to know in advance that roitzani is going to be forced out of me, and I don't really want it. So Rav Sheshet is saying that's valid. High man, the muscle my jaw getter. If he were to make a moidah about a get that he's going to give, moidah, then his moidah is a valid moidah, and the get would be bottled. So the question is, Shisa, isn't that obvious? Why should it be any different than any other case where a person can make a moidah? The answer is loitzricha, yes, but Rav Sheshet is chiddush is. Even in the case, Dr. Uha V'irti, what happens later on, based in Forstin, and he actually did say Roitani, but he wasn't Mevatol the Majal. Mao detained about Tule Batli. So you would argue maybe by saying Roitzani, implicitly he was Mavasol the Maidah, and therefore it should be a valid get. No, Kamash Malon. Therefore, Rav Sheshet tells us that's not the case. The Maidah is still in effect, therefore the get's no good. And we know that the Imkain listening ad Shiyitin, because otherwise the Mishnah didn't have to use the expression that he has to say Roitzani. All of it has to be is that he actually gives the get. My ad Shiyoymar, why does the Mishnah use the expression that he has to say Roitzani? That's not just enough to give the get, which on the face of it is something he's doing of his own volition. The point is, ad mevasel leila maidah. It will only be a valid get only if he verbally says, only if he's mevasel the maidah before giving the get.
By giving the get, he's already mevasel.
No, that's the whole point. The same way as when he's being forced to sell his field or what have you, the fact that he is giving them the deed to it, and the fact that he's accepting X amount of money from them or whatever, does not mean that he's doing it willingly. He still gave him a jaw ahead of time, and therefore he has recourse in Beis Din to say that I was forced into it, and to demand back his field, and we pay them the money or whatever. The same thing, Rav Sheshet is saying, would apply to a get. Just because afterwards he gives the get with his hand to his wife does not make that it was Lurus Farnay because there was a Maidah there. So in order for it to be valid, because the Mishnah uses the expression, should Yoimah right finally, he has to withdraw his Maidah. In fact, Tosfos points out a practical halacha that comes out of this, which you can find in any sefer on the halachas of Gittin. For example, there's a Seder, I guess, in Shulchan Aruch, there's Kavnaki from the Rebbe's great-grandfather, whatever, any standard manual on the halachas of Gittin is that at some point, during the process, the Rav, who is being mesadeh to get, will tell the husband that he has to be mevatel any previous moidah or any previous moidah on a moidah that he may have made. Because you can also
give towards giving the get?
Before he gives the get. In other words, you can also have a moidah of a moidah. Because, for example, he might have made a moidah, and he might have also told the Edom at the time, you should know, at some future point they might force me to retract my moidah, I am making a moidah that I'm not being mevatel that moidah. So therefore, Beis Din will tell him now, the Rav, Masadr Get, will tell him, you have to now be Mavasol, any Majois, or whatever, in order for the Get to be Chal. Otherwise, the Get is going to be no good, and his wife is still an Eshet Ish. No, you have Edom there for a Get anyway. You have Edom that signed the Get, right? And you have Edom Chassima who signed the Get, you have Edom Masira who see the Get being given over, sometimes they're the same people, sometimes not, but whatever.
The contrast between the baby forcing him to give a get, and then he does ask questions about the Johnson.
No, we do. That's what we're saying. That's what the Gemara is telling us.
Yeah,
that's what we're saying.
I'm not talking about this. The other case
in general, there's no Maidah, so therefore, but in general, as a standard part of the procedure of giving a get, The Rav will tell the husband in the presence of the Edim, be mevatel any potential Maidahs or Maidahs of Maidahs that you make, because we don't want that to come and back and bite us later. We don't want that. We're going to write out a get, and you're going to give it to your wife, and she's going to think now that she's a grusha, and she's free to remarry. And later on, you're going to come in front of Edim and say, hey, but last week I made a Maidah, and therefore the get is bottle, and now she's going to be in big problem. In all cases, we tell him, be mevatel any Maidahs that you made previously. Yeah. Okay. So now we just talked about the idea that you have to that in some cases Beis Din may have to take a mashkin from the guy in order to make him pay the erech. So now we're going to talk about that. Now we're going to talk about in general. We're going to talk about more generally the concept when we have to sell property on behalf of Hekdesh, and that applies whether the person defaults on it and we have to take it away from him, whether we're talking about, for example, Pasha, the person was Makdish, a piece of land, or what have you, and the Gizbarim have to go and sell it. How do we go about that? And this Perek is actually going to deal a lot with Dinim Mominus in general, because the Dinim that we're going to learn over here apply more generally to Dinim Mominus. So the Mishnah starts off, Shum HaYisoyim, when you have an assessment that was done of property of Yisoyim, namely, you can have a case, Reuven owes Shimon X amount of money, and we'll see in the Gemara what the exact scenario is, but whatever the case, Reuven owes Shimon X amount of money, Reuven has died, he left over Yisoyim, Chanoich and Palu and so forth, and now, for various reasons, as we're going to see in the Gemara, the exact scenario, Beis Din is responsible to take property from the Yisoyim and sell it in order to pay off the debt to Shimon. So then, the din is Shum HaYisoyim Shloshim Yom. The assessment, after the assessment, they have to announce for 30 days that this property is available to sell. That way, hopefully there'll be a bidding war on it, and therefore the more money they get for it, the more then they'll pay off the guy in the assignment. We'll be able to get. So they have to wait 30 days.
Advertise?
Yeah, they have to advertise during that 30 days. We're going to start right. So that's 30 days. You have to do that. Actually, Tosfa says it's not strictly speaking only assignment. The point is, any time when Beis Din is taking property from somebody and selling it to pay a debt, you have to announce for 30 days. The point is, even Yisomim, you only need 30 days. As opposed to the Shumah HaHekdesh Shishim Yom, as opposed to when you're selling property that belongs to Hekdesh, or you're selling property on behalf of Hekdesh or whatever, then you need Shishim Yom, then you need to announce for 60 days. Or Machrizin Baboyker of Erev. You make an announcement every morning and every evening about it.
That's the question on that. People know it's going to be sold after 30 days. They'll wait till the end and kind of sell it anyway, and they're not
going to build up the price. Maybe, but on the other hand, they can figure that I have a better chance. You could argue the same thing when they bid for Elias and Shul, right? I mean, eventually they're going to top out at some price, but you still figure, I'm going to be the highest bidder and I'm going to get it. Yeah. Okay. Sigmar says, my shnubba boiker of why are you announcing Davka every morning and every evening? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, it's like this. You're doing v'shas ha'tzas poylim or v'shas ha'chnotas poylim. You want to announce it when workers are going out to work and when workers are coming back from work. Why? B'shas ha'tzas poylim, because when workers are going out to work, what happens is the ikka de nichal mizban, you have somebody who may want to buy the property, but he wants to be able to have somebody look it over first and see whether it's worthwhile. So therefore, omalahul poylim, so therefore, when he has workers going out to work, he will tell them, go detour you're on your way to do work in my field or whatever. Detour on the way, go check out this field and see whether it's worth it, like you're saying. So that's why we have to do B'shach HaTzas Poylim, so they have a chance to check it. And then B'shach HaChnotas Poylim, why do you need to announce again when they're coming back from work, the Nidkar, because that way the guy is going to remember. Now he's going to remember when he hears the announcement in the evening, oh, this morning I told my workers to go check out the field, so now it's the evening, they're coming back, let me remember to ask them what they think of it. Tosfos actually learns the other way around. Tosfos learns that what it means is, when they're going out to work, you're not going to tell them to detour from their work and check out the field. You have work for them to do. So Tosfos understands it actually the other way around. When they're leaving work, you're going to ask them, by the way, on your way, when you're coming back from your work at the end of the day, check out the field, and tomorrow... Okay, but still, it's fine, but they still can, because they can still, as they're passing by that field, check it out, and then the next morning, before he sends them off to work again, so what do you guys think of that field? Okay, anyway, that's the point. That's why you have to announce in the morning meeting. We learn indeed like that in a Braisa. Shumah Yisoyimim Shloshim Yoyim, the assessment that's done of property of Yisoyimim is a minimum of 30 days. The Shumah Hekdesh Shishim Yoyim, the time after the evaluation of property of Hekdesh is 60 days. And by the way, what this means is, in other words, that first you have Beis Din evaluate and assess how much they think the property is worth. Then you start advertising. So they assess, for example, that we consider this property to be worth 1,000. So they start announcing. As the Gemara is going to say, they start announcing at that price. So like this. So the Braisa says, they announce in the morning and the evening, when workers are going out and when workers are coming in. And the announcement is like this. They say like this. Such and such a field, which has such and such characteristics, and which has such and such boundaries, so that everybody can understand what plot of land we're talking about. This is how much it's worth. Meaning, Rashi says it produces X amount of. It can be expected to produce X amount of produce per year. And this is the amount that we based in evaluated as, either based in themselves or their higher professional assessors, whatever the point is. And they announce, anybody who wants to buy this property, come and buy. So in other words, they'll say, for example, this in this field, with these simonim, these mitzvotim or whatever, it can be expected to produce X amount per year. We've evaluated it as being worth $1,000. So this is the bidding, starts at $1,000. You want to bid up, then you can bid up. And then that goes during the whole 30 or 60 days. And they say, anybody who wants to buy, come and buy. And they have to add the detail that you should know, you're buying it where the deal is, that the money is going to be used, that you're going to be paying the money to the widow, for example, for her ksuba, or to the creditor for his debt. So that's the question. Normally, the main one I'm going to ask is the issue of kibos or bal chayv, right? Why is it important to mention that detail? The reason is because some people. So let's think about it. When you're buying this field, it's not you're not going to be giving the money to the original owner of the field, who then is going to turn around and pay his bal chayv. You're going to be giving the money directly to the woman who's collecting her ksuba, or to the bal chayv. So the point is, some people would rather buy a field where the money is going to be given to a bal chayv, because they can get a break with it, the make of the zuzi, because the bal chayv is more willing to take substandard coins. Exactly what it sounds like. In other words, so you have coins which are a little bit dented or a little bit missing a little bit of their substance or whatever. Where when a woman is collecting her ksuba, she may be more picky about it. She doesn't want them, but a bal chayv wouldn't mind collecting them as long as it can be used as a dollar out in the marketplace. He doesn't care if it looks ugly or not.
So they don't give the money to the owner.
That's the point. They give it directly to the bal chayv. So some people would prefer, if I'm going to be buying a field for $1,000. Let's say, and that means I need to come up with $1,000 cash on the spot, but not necessarily are all of them going to be such beautiful looking coins. Some of them, as Rashi says, some of them are going to be a little bit broken, some of them are going to be missing a little bit or whatever. The big deal, bal chayv won't care so much about it, because in fact you actually have an expression elsewhere in the Gemara, which Rabbeinu Gershon brings over here. There's an expression that says when somebody owes you money, take whatever he's willing to offer you. Even if all he's willing to offer is bran, take it. It's better than nothing. So therefore, bal chayv is more likely to say it's better than nothing. That's how it is, because we don't want, that's how it is, because you don't want to give the money to the actual owner himself, and then he's going to leave town. But the whole point is, the Beis Din is overseeing the sale of the field in order to pay the bal chayv, so you want to make sure the bal chayv gets his. On the other hand, the ichad nichale beisha. On the other, yeah, for karka we're talking about. Primarily we're talking about for karka. For metalfalin, really, these dinim don't apply because metalfalin can be stolen. So once you start advertising that there's such and such metalfalin available to sale, somebody might steal them.
An
eved also, you don't make this kind of announcement. I think we're actually going to talk about that later in the parak. But an eved, you also don't make such an announcement because the eved then may run away. Yeah. Anyway, the point is. So on the one hand, some people would prefer to buy a field where the money is going to the bal chayv, because then they can even give substandard coins and the bal chayv will accept them. On the other hand, some people would prefer to buy it where the money is going to the wife for her ksuba, the shakla al yad, because she'll be willing to take payments in installments. Whereas a bal chayv may not. He may say, look, I'm owed $1,000. I expect the whole thing cash on the barrel head. Whereas she's more likely to say, it's fine. You can pay me some of it now and some of it, and then some of it next month or whatever. So that's why you need to announce what the purpose of the sale is. Okay.
Three categories.
Edith and Benjamin, yeah.
Those three categories. Can you have defective coins in either one of those?
Probably. I mean, here, Edith, Benjamin, and Zebudis refer to the quality of the field itself. Here, we're talking about the actual amount of money that's being paid for it. We're talking about the actual coins that are being paid. Okay, turning up on them, we live in Nebraska. Shuma Yisomim Shloshim Yom, again, after the assessment of property of Yisomim, then you need to announce for 30 days. By the way, Tosfos over here learns, what happens, let's say, for example, so we said Beis Din does an assessment of the property, they come up saying, let's say, it's worth $1,000, and then they start putting it up for bidding. Tosfos learns like this. Let's say, for example, the bal chayv were to say, you know what, I can't be bothered to wait 30 days. Look, Beis Din, you say this field is worth $1,000. Fine, I'm willing to take it for $1,000. And that'll pay off your debt. Can we do that or not? Tosfos says yes. Because why not? He's owed $1,000. Let him there. On the other hand, many other Rishonim disagree with Tosfos on that, on the grounds that, after all, who says that we're only going to be able to sell it for $1,000? If we put it up for bidding for 30 days, we may end up getting 11 or 12 or 13 or whatever hundred for it. So the halacha is actually not like Tosfos in that. The halacha is paskin, not like Tosfos, that regardless, even if the guy says, I'm willing to take it for the price that Beis Din says at the beginning, nevertheless, we still have to put it up for auction for 30 days to see if people will bid up the price.
Don't we set up an upset price?
What do you mean? A maximum price? No, why?
Minimum.
No, that the minimum price is what Beis Din starts off with. They evaluated it at $1,000. That's the point.
No. It's not how much they evaluated. There's a debt on that property. That debt has to be paid up. Let's say the property is worth much more. not what happened.
Well, then what you do is you sell a piece of the property. Then you don't sell the whole property. Then you sell a piece of it. That would be enough to. That would be enough to. Okay, so then you say, okay, you can sell total ownership of the house. You can. Yeah, you can. For example, you can sell. I sell a certain part of it, and it means you're going to be able to collect X percent of the rent of it, whatever. Okay, anyway. Again, after you assess the property on to pay off the debt that you owe, you have to advertise for 30 days. The shuma hechta shishin yom, and for hechta shet 60 days. That we said in the Mishnah, but now we're going to say in the Braita, divrei Rav Meir. That's only the opinion of Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda, the shuma yisemim shishin yom, the shuma hechta shishin yom. Rav Yehuda says no, it's not 30 and 60, but 60 and 90. Macham say both of them are 60 days. Now, what is the halacha? Amar of chista, amar avimi. Hold on. Amar of chista, amar avimi. Halacha, shuma yisoymim, shishim yom. So Rav Chista says, in name of avimi, the halacha is that for yisoymim, it's 60 days. Now, one second. Yosef Rav Chinen, which seems to be against our Mishnah. It seems to be like what the Chachamim said, but wait. Yosef Rav Chiya Bar Ovin, so Rav Chiya Bar Ovin was sitting, so he was telling over the statement of Rav Chista's, Amalei Rav Nachman Yitzchak Rav Chiya Bar Ovin, Shishim Ka'amret or Shloshim Ka'amret? Let me clarify, did you say 60 or did you say 30? Amalei Shishim, so he said, what I said is Rav Chista said it's 60. Then he asked him, do you say him or Gehekish? Do you mean 60 days for Yisoymim or do you mean 60 days for Hekish? He says, I mean 60 days for Yisoymim. The question, therefore, is, could Rav Meir or could Rav Yehuda? Do you mean then like Rav Meir or do you mean like Rav Yehuda? And he says, So he says, I'm saying like Rav Meir. So the question is, but because the question is, what do you mean? How can you be saying that you're saying like Rav Meir? We just said Rav Meir says it's 30 days for Yisoymim. Why are you saying 60? Yeah. And it's Amalei. So Rav Chiya Bar Ovin tells him like this. Hachi Amar Rav Chista, because you should know, Rav Chista himself, the one who said this din, he also said in this connection, Me'avimi kul kulpi kavi boli Allah de Hashmaita. Rav Chista says, from Avimi, who was Rav Chista's Rebbe, I absorbed many good blows over this teaching. In other words, Rashi says that Avimi is teaching Rav Chista that Rav Meir holds that for Yisoymim it's 60 days. So I, Rav Chista, was telling him, what are you talking about? It says in the Braita 30 days. And Avimi gave me tremendous blows about that. It could mean literally, it could mean figuratively. There's a Rashi in Menachos that uses the expression, although you have different usages over there, that says maybe Shini Dohu, maybe it means that he put him temporarily in a chayrin for being chutzpahdik about it or whatever. But it could be that, it could be blows. There's actually a tshuva from the Tzemach Tzedek where he brings this Gemara and uses it to prove for a different context than halacha. The word kulpi means a wooden stick, because he says, he says you have a different source that suggests that it could be a metal stick, but you're not going to say that Avimi could ever hit his Talmud with a metal stick. That would be abusive. Yeah. Okay, so kulpi means blows or sticks. Tavi means good ones, or strong ones. Bali, I absorbed. Allah de Hashmaita. Bali, whatever. Bali, I absorbed. No, Meloshin Belua. Meloshin absorbed. Yeah. De Hashmaita, about this teaching, because Avimi clarified what it means is like this. Bal Lahaka is with Sufim. If you're going to be doing the advertising, on consecutive days, For a certain number of days straight, then shloshim, then you're right, then it's only 30 days. So when the Mishnah had said, when the Meir says in the Braisa, Shuma yisamim shloshim yom, that's only if you're doing 30 days straight. Except for Shabbos, maybe not. I mean, on the one hand, obviously people can't do business on Shabbos. On the other hand, there are some of the Mephoshim who say, I think it's Netzach Gola says, on the other hand, it is for a divine mitzvah, because it is to pay off a debt, which as the Gemara has mentioned on the bottom of the Amud is a mitzvah to do. So maybe you would be allowed to advertise on Shabbos. Okay, whatever. The point is that if you're doing it consecutively, then it's for 30 days. Basheni or Bachamishi Shishim. On the other hand, if you're only going to be doing it, this is Avimi is explaining to Rav Chista what Rav Meir means. And this is Rav Nachman Yitzchak in turn, is explaining to Rav Chiya Bar Ovin, why did I quote Rav Chista as saying that Rav Meir says 60 days, when in the Braita it said 30? So Avimi explained to Rav Chista Now, what it means is if you're doing it consecutively, then it's 30 days. V'sheni v'chamishi shishim. But if you're only going to be advertising on Mondays and Thursdays, then you need that to be spread over a period of 60 days. But afagav, okay, your pastor's the idea is you might do it Monday and Thursday because those are the only days when Beis Din sits. Okay, so anyway, so the point is, now, if you're going to go figure out how many days of Achroza do you have in 60 days, if you're only doing Mondays and Thursdays, it comes out, you come out only 18 days spread out over 60. So you would argue then that shouldn't be enough, because 2 weeks, right, so 60 days is 7.5 weeks, so 7 complete weeks gives you 14, then you have Rashi. 60 days is 7 weeks, is 56 days, plus another 4 days. But Rashi explains, what you do is you start the series on a Monday. You start the series on a Monday, so therefore you have like this. So you have the first week, second, etc. You come to the 8th week. You have so far, you come to the 8th week, therefore you have 16 days so far, 2 days. Then you have 4 more days left, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and you have two advertisements in there, so that brings you up to 18. So on the face of it, you should argue that's not enough. You need at least 30. Doesn't matter. Kibbutz de Mashcha Milsa, since it's going on for so long, since it's spread out over 60 days, Shami Inchi, people will hear about it, and therefore 18 advertisements is enough. So that's the point. If you're doing it consecutively, 8 periods of 7 days, plus an extra 2 more, because you have Monday and Thursday of 9. Yeah. So that's 18. But that's good enough, because even though you only have 18 as opposed to 30, but when you're doing it non-consecutive like that, when you have it spread over a period of 60 days, that's good enough that it'll attract public attention, and therefore the bidding will, it'll be bid up. And okay. And that's part of the halacha, is that the halacha is like Avimi's understanding of Rav Meir, that you can either do it 60 days in a row, or you're 30 days in a row, or you can either do it 30 days in a row continuously, or you can do it for 18 days spread out. The Rambam actually understands that that's only true as far as Yisoyim. As far as Hektish, he says you need 60 days consecutively regardless. Yeah.
So I mean, an advertiser who writes, say, I want to have it do it this way, you get more money out of it.
If there's an apertulopus, maybe, but I don't know. I mean, the pastures here we're talking about, where Beis Din is taking charge of the situation. Okay, so now the question becomes, why are we selling property of Yisoyim on behalf of a debt anyway? Why don't we tell the creditor, I'm sorry, these guys are Yisoyim, they're young boys, you have to wait till they get old. Well, because in general, you have a concept that it's actually in today's Rambam, Shloisha Parakim. Beis Din is called Avihem Shel Yisoyim. First of all, you have like this. The Gemara is going to talk about at the bottom of the Amud that paying a Baal Chayv is a mitzvah. However, Yisoyim, when they're below Bar Mitzvah age, are not yet obligated in mitzvahs. So Beis Din should not be, Beis Din being the guardians of the Yisoyim, Avihem Shel Yisoyim, they shouldn't be requiring to do the Yisoyim, requiring them to do a mitzvah that's going to cause them a financial loss when they themselves are not obligated in it. Plus, there's always the fact, as the Gemara is going to talk about, which we'll learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem, that you can have, we don't know. For example, there may be various reasons why the debt that this guy is claiming is not valid. You have a concept in halacha called toyan in the Yerush, in general, that Beis Din will try to bring up whatever possible arguments in favor of the Yerush, and especially in favor of the Yisoyim, that they can, and there are always possibilities. The shtar itself might be forged. It might be that the father paid off the debt before he died, and we just don't happen to have a record of it right now. It might be there could be various cases. So in general, on the face of it, Beis Din ought to say to this creditor, I'm sorry, we know you're saying you owe X amount of money. Not only prove it, but come back when these Yisraelim are older and are able to hold their own in Beis Din. Okay, it could be in 13 years, fine. No, so that's the thing. So actually, it's in today's Rambam, Shloisha Prakim, the Apotropos is actually not allowed to go to Beis Din on their behalf, even where he's sure that he's going to win the case, because nothing is ever 100% sure. You might lose the case, and then he's causing them, we learned this in Gittin, and then you're going to have, and then he's causing the Yisraelim a loss that they otherwise wouldn't have had. So no, you're not supposed to do that. However, Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Asi, Ein Niskokin L'Nichsi Yisraelim, Beis Din will not get involved in selling property of Yisraelim, to pay a debt, El Imkain Hoyse Ribis Echelosan, unless Ribis is eating away at it. In other words, suppose that the debt is to a Goy, and a Goy is charging interest. which he's allowed to. So therefore, the longer it goes on, if you wait until they're older, then that's wasted money. So therefore, Beis Din will get involved in selling. That's what Rav Ashi said. But Rav Yochanan says it's not only in that case. Oy l'shtar sheyesh b'ribis. One case indeed would be where there's a shtar that has ribis in it. In other words, according to Rav Yochanan, we're talking about a guy. With a guy. But either, first of all, if there's a shtar, where, in other words, it's not just a verbal debt, but there's an actual shtar that the guy has. Oy l'ksuvas isha, or another valid reason, Rav Yochanan is saying that you could, that Beis Din could be involved in selling property of Yisraelim, would be if the case is that the father's ksuba has to be, the wife's ksuba has to be paid off mishum mizoni. And the reason is because as long as her ksuba hasn't been paid, she's still entitled to mizonis, she's still entitled to support, and you have the same kind of thing. Money is going down the drain, meanwhile, if it's not paid off. So like this. Beis Din will say, fine, let's sell some property of theirs, pay off the ksuba, and that way the whole thing is off their back, rather than that she's going to be paying her, rather than they're going to be paying her mizonis for some long period of time. No, mizonis is a separate thing. It's one of the tnoi ksuba, but she's entitled to mizonis basically until she remarries, or actually, as the Gemara is going to say later, until she comes to Beis Din to collect her ksuba. She's entitled to mizonis. So therefore, so Rav Yochanan is saying that's also a valid reason to be selling the property, because otherwise, like this, you have money keeps on going out because of it.
The mezonos are taken from the principal of the property.
Yeah, you have this. They can only be taken from Bnei Chorin. I don't remember if they can be taken from Shvach or not, but they can only be taken from Bnei Chorin. They can't be taken from property that their father previously sold to somebody else. Fine, but
I understand.
Okay.
This is actually the property itself. Is the principal being taken out of that property?
Yeah, well, whatever it is. It could be the principal. It could be the, whatever it is. The point is
the rented property can go on forever.
Maybe, but on the other hand, the mizonis could also go on for a long time. So therefore, Rav Yochanan says, let's just get it over with. Sell some property, pay off of silver, and that way it's all for the assignment.
Otherwise,
the mizonis is going to keep on going on for a while. It could end up being. It depends what standard of living she's used to. It depends on what the cost of living is in the area.
I don't know.
Pretty much. Okay, so we'll stop you from my, if you guys have time, maybe we can continue.